Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, it is the Red Men Originals podcast. Steve's got a notification. You can tell because he looks at his phone every time he gets one.
Is that you?
I know.
He was just checking.
Yeah, exactly. Failed. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Page, Chloe Blocks, and Steve Hoare in the studio for this one. We're going to talk about the Villa game. We're going to talk about Bobby Firmino. And then we're going to try not to cry because sad and stuff, isn't it? Before we do dive into that, although put a lot of things into perspective, is perfectly honest, but Chloe, is something you just want to give a mention to?
Yeah, there is a GoFundMe page right now out, and it is a bike ride that's happening from Manchester to Liverpool in aid of the Megan Hurley Foundation. Megan Hurley sadly lost her life 6 years on this day in the Manchester arena bombing. So if anyone would really like to donate, the entire charity would appreciate the Megan Hurley Foundation aim to help those who have sadly lost loved ones suddenly, children, and therefore have to step away from work and aren't able to get income that way, and they do support them with that, and they also support other charities around them. So any donations are welcome. It's all for a really good cause, and in memory of those who sadly lost their lives in that Manchester arena bombing. So yeah, thank you to anyone who does donate.
Quality, yeah, it's worth mentioning. I think Megan's a Scouse girl, was only down
the road. Yeah, she's literally down the road, yeah, 15. Yeah. So it is a very heartbreaking thing.
Okie dokie, well, yeah, do get involved. We'll put the link in the description, and we'll put it out on our socials as well, so you can get onto that if you wish to. Right, let's get back to the footy then. Liverpool 1, Aston Villa 1, and look, because we'll do Villa first, because I just kind of want to get it out the way. You can see why they've turned the corner big time under Unai Emery. They look a lot more disciplined, they look a lot more organised, and they've got all the dark arts stuff down in a big way.
Yeah, they were resolute. They were really difficult to break down. You could see that throughout the entire 120 minutes of the game. yeah. It was ridiculous, actually, to be fair. Obviously, like, we've done a lot on like the formations and stuff over the last few weeks, so been looking for that type of stuff at the match and how Liverpool's five forwards and where they are, and quite often Liverpool's five forwards are in a line, and yet Aston Villa seem to have the numbers to deal with it consistently throughout the game. They just seem to know exactly where they needed to be at all times and made it so difficult. And you know, I think at times Liverpool you could almost say, like, well, we kind of gave up with the movement at times, but then at others there are people moving around, pulling this way, that way, trying to get in behind, you know. And yet, Aston Villa dealt with everything that Liverpool threw at them for the most part. And yeah, they were really good sides. I was really impressed with them in a defensive side of things. And I was really, really annoyed with all the dark arts that you mentioned. That's up there with the worst that I've seen this season. And, you know, up there with Newcastle, certainly.
Well, yeah, exactly. I was going to say that, Chloe. It reminded me of Newcastle in that regard, is that they feel like you either get your rubbish teams normally have that, or your truly elite teams. And Newcastle and Villa have both managed to kind of like pitch themselves in at this level and got that stuff going on for them. And there's a degree to which, I think I said this on my post-match video, when Liverpool do it, I'm like, this is brilliant. I love the fact that you get in fans' heads and you get to frustrate and you get to do all this stuff. It's horrendous when it happens at Anfield because it just makes you dead angry. But it goes into Villa. Villa presented a challenge and it was part of their game plan, and we didn't do enough to ultimately undo their game plan.
No, we didn't. And we kind of, instead of using the frustration in terms of striving us forward, it kind of looked like we just, you know, we kind of gave up with it. We were lost at what we could do. We didn't know the alleys which we could go down and change the game. And I've never seen it. I think that's worse than Newcastle, to be honest. I've never seen it that bad. It was like nothing else. And they've done that to disrupt us, to frustrate us. And it's worked. And the referee was the one who didn't have a handle on the game at all. You can tell by some of the decisions he made. And then to book Emi Martinez in the 75th minute, pointless.
Yeah.
Absolutely pointless. He's done it for 70 minutes.
He's set the tempo on that all day, all game long, hasn't he? Yeah. He's allowed them to do that by not dealing with it early on.
What I would say though, he did do the 10 minute injury time thing.
Yeah.
But then he did it in injury time. That was the bit. If they want to do it all game, sound. But go back to the World Cup where we just play injury time. Every time works as much as you want. It's getting added on, and he did that. But then two lads got booked for injury time for time wasting. And there was no extra time added on.
Yeah.
To play 10 minutes. That was the frustrating part for me, is that there's nothing refs can do, really. They can get you on with it and they can book you. But all they can do is add the time on. He did it.
Yeah, but Emi Martinez did it about 7 times before he got booked.
No, I know.
No, so, there's more than that. I reckon.
It was every time.
And that's the point. Paid. If you do book him early doors.
Book him on the first one.
Well, no, book him on the second. Whatever. He's probably saving 80 minutes of him doing that over and over again. And then they just use the defender to do it. And they'll eventually run out of players to do it with. And then they've got to play the game
properly.
They're
not going to bring a midfielder to do it. Yeah. The thing is that for football fans, it's more frustrating than anything because you pay decent money to go to a football game. And I reckon that football was in play for less than 60 minutes. I really do. It was that bad. And it's like you've paid your money to go and watch a football game, but instead all I've seen is a ball that's not
just
really
to be that twat, though. If I was a Villa fan, I'd be made up with that.
This
goes back to the game plan thing, is that they might have ruined our... And the money this is where it falls a bit flat. It's like they've ruined our afternoon, but they've made their own afternoon.
Yeah, but I think the point is, if the referee deals with it better, it doesn't get that bad.
Yeah,
that's sort of my thinking on it.
Yeah.
I totally understand it. When Liverpool do the dark arts, we've never done it that bad.
Yeah. Never in a million years. Got booked the other day at Anfield for taking his time, and I think on average it was still shorter than what any other Premier League goalkeeper had done, so he instantly got booked, and it was the first time he did it. Emi Martinez had done it all throughout the first half, and you knew everyone in the cop was saying he won't book him till the 80th minute.
And we started counting the ball in the keeper's hands, like the whole cop started counting. I think we got to like 13 or 14 before he finally kicked it on one, just to prove the point. And that the goalkeeper hands rule has never been enforced. I've never seen that enforced ever. No. I remember it coming in. I remember it being a big
6 seconds,
theoretically a big change, but I've never once seen anyone go, come on, you know, at worst you get told to hurry up a little bit, but you book up the things. You book a goalie. Has anyone ever been sent off for time wasting? You know,
by the way.
There was one a couple of years ago. We got 2 yellow cards on a goalkeeper. We got 2 yellow cards for time wasting.
Is any ref going to ever send the goalkeeper off for time wasting? This is the stupid thing about
why have the law?
Also, what I would say though, go back to the first point on their tactics. I think it was their tactics in the game more than the time wasting that really got on Liverpool, because what they did, they were so... It's mad to think that a team has come to be defensive, but usually that means they park a bus. They were so high and they congested the midfield. So all it meant was that our two most creative players in this team are meant to be Trent Alexander-Arnold and Curtis Jones. They couldn't get the ball.
Yeah.
And when they got it, there was nothing for them to do other than think it over the top and hope that the ball and run a time perfectly and the goalie doesn't get it. It was really brave. And it kind of, what I said, and I did the final away show this morning, the team that we had on the pitch wasn't the right team to play against that tactic. So fair play to Unai Emery, because he's probably half there thought Liverpool have just won 3-0, he's going to pick the same team again. I mean, one of them you couldn't do. That game is made for Darwin Nunez, but he's injured, because he will just run it. He'll play on the shoulder. Gakpo and Diaz both want to come to the ball. When a team are playing that high line, there's nowhere to come.
Yeah.
So you want to go over the top, and they tried it a few times, it never really worked. In hindsight, against that team who were that high, that you want Darwin and Jota, because they're your two on-the-shoulder players. So credit to them. I thought like Mings, for example, was magnificent. Should have been on the pitch, but was magnificent. So you've got to, it's one of them, it's like, I know we do it on bias sometimes, but we begrudging respect. It kind of is that. It's really annoying and it's horrible. And it was brilliant when we scored in the 97th minute against Newcastle to put it up them. And it'd have been brilliant if we could have scored in the 98th minute. But until, like Chris says, until the rules of the game are enforced, everyone's going to do it. Yeah. And if Liverpool got to the end of that next season and needed a draw away to win, and we win a title by doing that, then we'll all be sound.
And look, this is, you know, Emery's a boss manager. He genuinely is. And we've had he's given us some, you know, horrendous games for a variety of football clubs over the years. And I think it's what's useful from that is it's instructive. You know, someone who's actually managed to find a way to frustrate that kind of system. It really does. So Liverpool will get better at it, Chris. They'll train it more. People will get a more fluid understanding of it, yada, yada. But actually, what I saw a little bit was, if you've got no space in the middle of the park, well, that's one of them games where you go back to 4-3-3 and you push Trent back to being more of a wide creator. But we don't have that gear to switch to, whether it's 4-3-3 or a variation. That's another what we saw there was a limitation of where we're at in the process to some extent. We haven't yet developed answers for every problem.
No, of course, and that's right. We've been doing it for 6 weeks or something, haven't we? So you do expect that. I thought Steve made a great point there about the ball over the top. Like, constantly overhit is what I would say they were. Yeah. I mean, there must have been 10 of them in the first half where you're thinking, there's a chance for Mo to get on that, but the ball's just not good enough. And that might be because of the lack of time you've got in possession. But to sort of go onto your point then, Liverpool will get better at all of this type of things, and it's just something to go, right, okay, well, there's something that we need to improve on. And I'm sure Pep Linders and the rest of the coaches over this week will be like, right, well, if somebody does that again, this is what we do.
I hadn't even considered going back to 4-3-3, but I think that's a really good idea. In hindsight, that's what they should have done. We can't get Trent on the ball. We'll go and stick him back at right-back where he used to always get the ball. And in weeks gone by, we might not have had the team on the pitch to be able to do that, but that team was the 4-3-3 team. So it's all hindsight, and it works wonders.
And
but
it's also worth considering, you've not got your manager on the touchline as well. So I know Pep does a lot of like the nitty gritty of the tactical kind of stuff, like, but there is something sometimes where big decisions and big calls are done, you know, on the field sort of calls, something you've seen. Call an audible, that's it, you know, and Jürgen's the kind of guy, and not that he couldn't have done that, couldn't have sent a text, just a cheeky WhatsApp to Pep to make that happen, or whatever,
but there is,
yeah, but there's something to you having your guy there for when that thing happens. And we talk about it, we've touched upon the officiating, and it always feels like sour grapes when you do it after a result that's not gone your way, but Chloe, the refereeing was horrendous, and the limited credit is that he was terrible across the board.
Universally crap.
But we had more of the ball, we tried more things, and therefore had more decisions go against us, kind of thing. But it's just weird. This is the fourth, he was the fourth official, wasn't he, with the Tottenham thing of the week. So he's obviously got skin in the game in terms of this Jürgen Klopp stuff at this point. The whole thing was just crap. I think Mings should be sent off.
Sure.
I think Henderson should have had a pen.
I haven't seen that one back.
And the goal disallowed one is nuts. Like, I know it's an offside call, and it ends up being a subjective offside call, which is why he has to go to the screen. But the whole thing just smacks of stupidity and crapness.
Yeah, it seems like every single week I see a new refereeing performance that hits an all-time low, to be honest. I thought Spurs was bad, and like, it didn't really have anything on this. Was his name John Brooks? Is that who the referee was? I've hardly heard of him before.
He's the one who Klopp screamed in his face.
Oh, was it? Boss, incredible scenes. I remember the Mings one happening, and everyone thought it was a red card. He produced the yellow, and everyone stood there like, yep, it's going to VAR, and that's going to change, because it was so high.
Cody Gakpo took his top off to show the referee the stud marks like down his chest. You know what? Alisson Becker lifted his foot up to demonstrate the action of how they
right, do you think, and I said this, I mean, I don't want to repeat too much. Isn't it fucking obvious that when a fella lifts his top off and it looks like Wolverine's been at him, that you probably should send the fella off who did that? Mm. Like, why is that never the thought process? Well, I booked him now, so I'm not sure. No, actually, look, he's got 5 stud marks down his chest. I don't care if the fella got a touch on the ball or not.
It's dangerous. It
can't not be dangerous play for that to happen.
Yeah.
How can that happen without it being dangerous? It's clearly dangerous.
Your point, just to expand on your point there, if that's like on the knee, I think that's a red card, because I think people can work, can understand, like, well, look, if you make contact, studs up, midway up the leg, that's, we just call it a leg breaker. But there's something mad about the chest, which is where, like, you know, your most vital of organs is contained. And that kind of stuff. Yeah, I don't know what it is, that how that's, how we can... Because, like, breaking a rib is not as bad as breaking a kneecap or whatever. It's mad.
He didn't go to the screen for that
that's
one.
That's the thing that does my head in.
That's not a... They're both subjective calls. That's absolutely fine. Then the process should be either you go to the screen for both or you don't. How you do one or the other. And then on the goal, what I don't understand is... I might have this wrong, because bear with me. The goal was given on the field. So they needed clear and obvious...
Yeah.
Proof that there was a clear and obvious error made, that Conta didn't try and kick that ball. To overrule a decision, that's the right protocol, isn't it?
I think they got rid of the clear and obvious, didn't they?
No, it's not. I think
this subjective stuff, I think they might have done.
Well. Either way, he tries to kick the ball. Like, so I don't think there's enough evidence to overturn it. I think what they should do is, like, I can't overturn that because I think there's not enough in it. If there's not enough evidence to overturn Tyrone Mings to a yellow card, you know, get what I'm saying?
No, I get what you're saying. You're right. You've not changed, because, like, all of those incidents, when you watch the Jordan Henderson back one, I wouldn't say that was the most stonewall penalty I've ever seen, but he tries to cut the ball back and he gets his leg, his standing leg, taken away while he's doing it. So there's more than enough there to be given a penalty, but you're right, the decision's given as not penalty. So it actually needs to be above and beyond for that to be...
Same
for the Ming stuff. But the point is, it goes against those other two decisions because the ball ends up in the back of the net, the goal is given, and then they've gone back and actually decided that was the one where there was enough of a, you know, he's made a judgment call on that one. But again, equally, he's been told to go and look and make a call on that. He wasn't given the choice on the other
two. That's my point of it, is that all three of those have to be refereed the same way. They're either all subjective and you stick with the ref, or all three times he's got to go to the monitor. How you can have two where he goes and one, and I get it because it went against, they all went against Liverpool, yeah. But that process makes no sense to me. So how can the fourth official deem that he doesn't need to have a look at the other two, but he does need to look at the goal? I can't figure out how that works. It makes no sense that it's either obvious or it's all subjective, and that's where it's muddy. I'm not sure about the pen. I think that's one of those where you don't overrule it. Sound a red card's a red. It's just. I mean, he kicks him in the heart. Like, it's just a red card. And then the goal is a goal. Like, he does try and kick that ball. He just does.
Yeah.
Unless Konza runs right, and then he's got this little kink in his run where on the fifth step of every run, his left leg goes. Unless that's the thing that he's got going for him,
that
he just, like, I don't know.
Yeah, like one of those, like, puppies that goes, brok, 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 and then backflips, like, every fifth step.
It's the fact that, like, you can clearly see he's tried to play the ball. If he's not tried to play the ball, it just hits him. Like, he doesn't move a body part, it just strikes him. If he doesn't move his leg up in that movement, the ball's gone past him.
Yeah.
He's not stopping that ball going into the box.
Yeah.
And therefore, it could have bounced around. They could have cleared it, but Liverpool also could have scored. Yeah. He's lifted his leg up to stop a ball going past him. Therefore, he's deliberately played the ball because he's tried to stop the pass.
It's like not giving a goal because a defender's tried to clear it and spooned it into their own net. You know what I mean? It's like, well, you know, that's not what he meant to happen. That's not what he meant to happen. And I know there's a bit of this thing with, like, the back pass rule's a bit like this, isn't it? Where there needs to be deliberate intent to play it back. But, and I get this is the problem with rules in football. It's such a free flowing sport that you're going to find exceptions to every single rule, or rules that you go, oh, well, I see it this way and I see it that way. But again, it's to be so picky as to take a goal out of football for the moment where you could make a strong case for it being enough of a case for it being.
And it's
fine.
It's the process of how you make your decisions. The inconsistency of decisions is one thing. You have to arrive at those decisions in the exact same way. That's subjective. But actually, you don't have to worry about looking at those two, mate. I'll make those ones for you. Actually, but I need your help on this one. The fella in Stockley Park is adamant. I don't need to worry about Ben. And I don't have to worry about that. Yeah, like, you've made your spot on in your subjective opinion. By the way, you've given this goal subjectively. You might have hit that, or you might have not. Come and have a little look at this fella. And once he gets called over, it's always going to be given. That's what does my head in with it. They just need to get the, like, either you look at them all or you don't look at any of them. You can't do pick and
pick. Hang on a minute. You'll have too much time on. We had fucking 17 minutes of added time because of Emi Martinez.
Can I ask you a question, guys? Do you think there's something in, again, I might have Tim for your last on here. He's the ref that Jürgen shouts that has been allocated to the Liverpool game.
You can't disprove it. You can't disprove it.
The game that Jürgen's banned is the game where I've never seen this ref before in my life. Yeah. And then he is. And he's just chilling out on Anfield.
I got asked before the game, does anyone know who the referee is? And I went, it can't be one of the bad ones because you'd have known a week ahead.
Isn't the ball?
But it turns out they're pulling them out of Orca. They're pulling them straight out of school. You know what I mean? But Michael Oliver was the fourth official. He's there. He's a good referee. The best referee they've got is the fourth official for this game. Swap him. You know what I mean? It's mad. It's like they can't even go, well, we were running out of good refs because we had some big games and this is what was left. The best referee in the country was stood basically holding up the added on time board. That's probably why that was accurate to me.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, because he's a Newcastle fan, they were worried about him. Like, he couldn't have been worse. Even if he was actively biased against us, he couldn't have been that bad. Like, we'd probably still won 1-0. Like, you know, I don't know.
But it's the way that they all try and not be influenced by the cop, but they don't realise that they're all being influenced the other way.
Yeah.
And it winds you up time and time again, doesn't
I think
it?
I haven't said this so right, I think, I don't know how much you want, like, we were crap as well.
Oh, yeah. We were like crap.
That, yeah, and that's part of it. We can have all these moments.
Sometimes you need to get a bit of luck. That's just the truth. Sometimes that is what needs to happen. The thing that it'd be so much easier to deal with if you didn't have VAR and they just got a decision wrong, but it's just one human. They've only seen it once. That's fine. He could have gone and looked at all three of those things and he did look at one. And you sit there and you can look at it for 5-6 replays. And bear in mind, everyone in the ground doesn't know what the hell is going on. You've taken your time and you've came to that conclusion, or you've got the monitor there, you've got the equipment there, and you don't go and do it. It's just, it's harder to deal with because you've got things to back you up to show it. And it's even more frustrating when the 3 p.m. thing on BT Sports, I don't know what it is, it's like the soccer Saturday version of that. Every single person on that couch was like, yeah, that's got to be a goal. But yeah, he's played the ball out. And the crap referee that I don't know his name who's on there turned around and said, yeah, if that was me on the pitch, I'd have gave a goal. And then you've got Dermot Gallagher or whatever the hell his name is saying, no, it's rightfully being disallowed. It's like, all these football players who played on a pitch have turned around and said he's deliberately played the ball. It should be a goal. But yous who have not stepped a day on a professional football pitch to play football at all sat there, and you've got one saying yeah it's a goal, one saying no
to be
it's
fair,
a goal.
I've
it's
got
like
no,
all over the place.
I've got no doubt that those fellas sat on the couch don't know the rules, to be fair. They don't.
The referee,
you know what I mean?
Was there and explained the rules to them, and I think Robbie Savage was the one, and I can't stand him, turned around and said, yeah, but he's clearly played the ball out. Look at his leg. Watch his movement. And that's
what
the
ref was like.
The
thing that annoys me most about it is, I reckon you could get that ref to watch that incident 50 times and he'd come up with a split decision each time.
That's why he's been overruled.
Exactly. Because he watched that 25 times and go yes and 25 times and go no. And this goes back to your point, which I think is brilliant, is it's just much easier to accept when they get to see it once in real time, and then if they just get it wrong, you can go, all right, the ref shit sounds, but it's hard. Now you're like, well, you've got all the information that you could possibly need.
Can I tell you how that will have gone down, by the way? If they ever release the audio, I guarantee they're watching it, right, checking offside, and then it'll be, because we heard this on the Monday Night Football of the week, didn't we? And it'll be, hold on a second, guys. And you hear the flipping of pages just picked up inaudibly, barely on the microphone. Hang on a second. I've just found
rules and regulation 99.402.
I think I've spotted something here. Look, technically, I don't think he's deliberately played that. And that means the Virgil van Dijk is actually in an offside position, which means the goal should be ruled out. And they go, oh, that sounds about right. Good one. And it'll be like, good one, Spodger. Good catch. Well done, everyone. Good job, everyone. A little smattering applause in Stockley Park. Morons, what are you doing? Just fucking let it go. Like, honestly, it goes, that's the point. If you're not gonna do it for any of the other big decisions that happened earlier on the game, what are you doing? Why are you micro-analysing something that's a goal? It's in. You know what I mean? You're stealing goals out of football games on subjective opinions. It's fucking madness. Elite Six sent us a super chat while we were chatting, just to back up what Chloe was saying there. Gallagher on Sky Sports says the Mings one was a clear red. And even said the ref had all the way till the restart to decide he wants another look.
I don't get. This is my point. There's a fella laying on the floor with fucking bear mark on his chest, with like even clawed to death. I'd think if I'm a ref, I'd go, you know what? I wouldn't mind having a little look how that happened. Can I go over? Because he must be able to go to his favourite throw replay on for us, mate. Because yeah. This fella is laying on the floor, right, and there's stud marks on his chest. He looks like he's been attacked by an animal. I wouldn't mind having a check of how that happened, please. Yeah. No,
it's worth a look, isn't it? It's got to be worth another look, you know, in that instance.
Mate, he's like,
how far away from it was he? Does anyone know?
I didn't think he was that far.
I don't.
That's probably not helped us.
No, I think also Mings does touch the ball. So if he's just seen Mings kick the ball, the ref's eyes might have followed the ball. Because I get that.
Or they've said to him, he does touch the ball first, and he's gone, that's enough for me. That's enough for me to vindicate the decision that I've made.
The mad thing is, people always reference this, like, oh, he gets the ball, he doesn't get the ball, right? Sometimes I think the ends doesn't necessarily mean it's a foul. Sometimes you can cut somebody and it's not a foul. Other times you can be running, dribbling the ball and punch someone in the face as you're holding them off, and that is a foul. So actually it doesn't matter all the time whether they've touched it or they don't. You just need to check it one way or another for a foul.
Yeah,
that's like you know what I mean.
Yeah, total bollocks. Right. Anyway, Bobby Firmino came on, scored, wonderful stuff. It's the assist from Mo as well. It was just wonderfully poetic, the whole thing. Obviously, the shame is that we don't then go and get the winner. But as far as a small moment goes, Bobby getting that final goal is just it's a lovely moment.
Yeah, I was one of the probably thousands of Liverpool fans who had Firmino last goal bet coming, because I'm guessing that was a fairly popular bet. Just a shame it wasn't the winner. It's ironic, really, because I thought Salah was crap.
He was.
Yes. He was awful all game, and then he just put. That's why you leave Mo Salah on.
Yeah.
When I saw Harvey Elliott get him stripped off, I thought, oh, he's taking Salah off here. And I wouldn't have blamed. If he'd have took Salah off when he took Diaz off, wouldn't have blamed him, because they were all rubbish. But like, that's why you keep Mo Salah on the pitch. He's got that in him. And it showed, like, Bobby Firmino wanted to score that goal so much. Like, he just froze himself, flying kick through the air kind of style to get it. It was interesting because what I hated about it, that it's an equaliser, no winners, that he couldn't celebrate it properly.
Yeah, he had
to hit the ball up and go, and then he had a little bit, because that's the winner. It's the let off of all let off. Such a shame. And like I say, I actually, from that moment on, I felt, oh, we're going to win this. 10 minutes ago, we're going to win this. Yeah. And yet we have a couple of corners, and then Villa go back to the time thing, and it doesn't pan out. But it's almost impossible for us to get Champions League now. There's the slimmest of slim hopes. But it's still a great moment that Firmino scored that goal on his last appearance. It also shows me, like, we have missed him a little bit.
Yeah.
He's been good this year when he's been fit. He hasn't been fit enough.
Well, I think that's 12 goals in 34 appearances for us this year.
He played that role so much differently to Gakpo when he came on as well. Like,
he had just
one thing in his mind, and that was, I'm going to get into the box and I'm going to score goals. And Gakpo was the complete opposite. Played the proper false nine role. And Firmino has none of that. And I think, to be fair, he's got better at that since Jota came into the club, and I think that's something that sort of rubbed off on him, hasn't it?
I totally agree. I think the last two and a half, 3 seasons, it's hard to judge because he's been out the side more with injury, but I think he's been a lot more of a goal threat in that last couple of years because he's decided, I'm just going to score some.
Yeah, I'm slagging it around here.
But it was so funny the way he finished it, and he's like falling over, and did he get his leg kicked out from under him?
No, he just jumps and throws himself at it.
He's brilliant. Like, and that was one big let off for a draw that probably really didn't matter. Like, as far as cop let-offs or stadium let-offs go, for a draw in that situation was huge.
The other thing was when Salah actually, like, I've said this so many times, in the game, he'd beat Ashley Young or he'd beat the left-back, but then he'd come right back into them and you're like, what are you doing? Use your right foot, put it in the box. And he doesn't like doing it. And this time he realises, okay, well, you stood off me because you know I've got the pace to go around you. So I'm just going to take this yard and then I'm going to use my left foot to manipulate the ball and be able to pass it with the outside of his foot. But he was so, so frustrating. And to produce such a boss ball just shows what Mo Salah can do. But he was really frustrating. The fact that you'd see him beat someone and he'd just cut back in because he just wanted to use his left foot. And it felt like there was a lot of players on that pitch who wanted to be the hero yesterday and just held a hold of the ball far too long at moments. And I can totally understand it. I can understand the desire, the want to do that. But we kind of lost ourselves because we either didn't know how to break them down, fair play to Aston Villa for that, or someone really wanted to be the hero and just held the ball for far too long and tried too many things.
Yeah, and going back to the very sort of beginning and what Steve said sort of halfway into the conversation, like Liverpool, for me, they let the occasion get the better of them.
Yeah.
At the weekend, it was all about Bobby Firmino, it was all about James Milner, and taking that back to Aston Villa and their game plan, like they will have known that this had the potential to be one of the best atmospheres ever at Anfield. If like, you know, something happens our way in the beginning of things, and they just took us out of the game completely. Like
they're a point to win. Yeah, you know what I mean? Or 3 points to win, really. They could have come away with that. That was a team that came to Anfield who are also on a process, on a building path. There, they want European football. They've got something to come for. They don't give a shit about our circumstances or what we want from a football match. They're not just turning up to be part of this Bobby Firmino party. You know, Emery's got them turned them into a serious machine. They're a serious business.
They weren't just they had a goal for it.
Yeah,
that's what they want. They managed to be brave and have a goal for it.
I want to talk about, because Jürgen Klopp points out, we've kind of alluded to it. I thought it was the general sense of it. I thought there weren't a lot of really good performances on the pitch for Liverpool, and he said apparently he asked them after the game who thinks they had a good game.
Who do you reckon put their hand up? The goalie.
Probably.
Rumours are he asked them to put them into three categories: boss, sound, and messing.
Yeah. Who do you think red men have got in your messing? And who do you think's in boss, lads? Come on, we're going to sit down and watch it now. The live now.
The goalie, maybe.
I don't think anyone would have, to be honest.
I think Alisson was brilliant.
Yeah, but what I mean is, I don't think Alisson would have been the only one to put it. I don't think anyone, because the point is, it's a rhetorical question. Someone says, who thinks he is, had a really good game.
It's
an opportunity for you to be, if you've absolutely run the show, absolutely. But yeah, the goalkeeper almost doesn't count, doesn't he? You know, it's not like he's chucked one in.
I reckon Bobby put his hand up.
Should have started me, mate. But I just wanted to actually, I got up because we've still got one game left to play, but it's a nice, some nice round numbers involved in this. Mohamed Salah's made 50 appearances for Liverpool in all comps this season. 30 goals and 15 assists.
The last four. I think that was like a record, wasn't it? 4 assists on the bounce. Pretty nuts, that, like.
How many assists does he have, sorry?
15.
He's a joke, isn't
he? He's ridiculous. And do you know what? For the first time ever as well, I think he's tired. I think the last three games, he looks absolutely done in. Yeah. But he plays 90-odd minutes every game, so...
Yeah, he's absolutely... He is ridiculous. But, yeah, that was a great example of... It's not all there yet. We've had a good run of games. We've actually had equally quite a good run of teams to play in that. You know, not gimmies by any stretch, and lots of other circumstances where we might have lost them games earlier on in the season, absolutely. But, yeah... The good thing is that, you know, what you want is, you don't want it all your own way when you've got a summer to come up. You want things to kind of pull apart. And, you know, that was the first time where that was Trent's worst game in that position. It was probably Curtis's worst game in that position. Probably Gakpo's worst game since the early days of coming into the side. Diaz looked a little bit ineffectual. And you could kind of go around the team. There wasn't tons of players there going... Hang your hat. I thought Fabinho was all right, actually. You know what? He looks okay.
Yeah. Can I make one more point on general positive wise? Mm-hmm. That's a kit you can win a league in, that.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, mate, that is a league where we look like absolute champions. I mean, the footy players never, but like literally what you were wearing, they looked like, that's a kit that you can think, oh,
we
wow.
Look like it's we've a trophy been playing in rags that. All years. That share compared to that one is absolutely ridiculous.
And the goalkeeper being in green. I was talking about it before we came on. Like,
that's a kit of winners, that.
It's just like, that's what you want. You want a goalkeeper who's magnificent in green.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The when they all walked out, I was like, oh, we're going to win 7-0, yeah.
We touched upon it, you know. I kind of, you know, I've been banging the drum of what's possible for the last couple of weeks, not because I think it was ever gonna happen, but ultimately because K-Sara, Liverpool will end up where they deserve to end up. And look, if you were going to be a Champions League team, we've said it plenty of times this season, there's points that we should have won if it was definitely going to happen. That's one of, you know, ultimately if we finish a Europa League team, which as you said before, is so it's very 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 likely. That's been the level where we're at. We've managed to turn a bit of a corner, but if you're down to position, Chris, where you've got to win 10 probably games consecutively at the end of your final 10 games of the season to guarantee top four, you fucked it. You have let you have that.
We completely fucked it, you know. And there's loads of reasons that we've all spoken about for what feels like 2 years now, but it's not been. The season's been that long, and there's been that many problems.
We won the big place at the start of the season.
I know, and you know, all the 63 games last season, the heartbreak and all, yada yada yada. The injuries has been massive. I think the investment in the wrong area of the team in the January transfer window has not helped us. I still think if we could have invested in the midfield, we would have been able to probably make it now. Having now seen what we were able to do without that investment, I do think there's a chance. But Liverpool have got a chance in the summer now to turn that around and really kick on next season. I think everybody else now is looking at the way that Liverpool have finished this season, reassessing where they see themselves in terms of the league next season. I think Manchester City can be comfortable to know that they're probably going to walk the league again. Barring anything finishing and bans being held out or whatever, point deductions or whatever, which could be in 10 years' time, who knows. But I do feel now that going into next season, everyone else will be thinking Liverpool are going to be second in this league and we need to book our ideas up.
Yeah, I might agree on that. We're going to do much more on City's horrendously predictable and boring Premier League title win over on the Biased Football podcast straight after this. I want to talk about Arsenal and all that as well, and of course the relegation fight. And if you want more on this game, then do check out the Final Word show with Steve, with Abby Rudkin and with Jamie Cranford as well.
Jamie's amazing shirt.
His shirt is sensational.
It's a shirt of a champion. If Liverpool look like champions, Jamie certainly look like a champion. Yeah. So Abby as well, to be fair.
Both of those shows will be exclusive over on redmenplus.com. So if you want to go and sign up, and if you want to get a huge discount on your subscription, choose a club captain yearly, use the code YEAR, YEAR, and get £25. That's right. For £25 for an entire year, which is 50% off, which is ridiculous. You're going to get the Bobby Firmino doc and loads more.
You're going to get like two, is it two Journo shows a week over the summer as well?
Hopefully.
We've got you covered with all the transfer stuff coming. And of course, yes, we've got our incredible Bobby Firmino documentary coming up. We're going to play you a little clip from that if you're watching on YouTube. It won't make sense, so it won't be in the podcast version because they're all talking German. But we will cut to that in a moment. But yeah, when we come back, we're going to talk Bobby Firmino, Milner farewells and beyond as well. So stay tuned.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah, that's going to be coming out in June. Episode 1 is going to be on YouTube. 2, 3 and beyond are going to be on Redmen Plus. So you get the full hit, the full experience. It is going to be absolutely incredible. Another little teaser from that to follow later on as
really?
Well.
I haven't seen this teaser. I'm looking forward to being teased by you.
Fabulous. you kind of touched on it before, Chris, but yeah, Bobby Firmino, Milner's farewell ended up overshadowing the game, really. It became not a team, almost like a post-season match, like, you know, that kind of environment. The atmosphere around the ground was brilliant. It was great to see so many Firmino shirts and scarves and flags and banners and all that kind of thing. But yeah, it was almost like we were waiting for him to come on the pitch, almost more than the business of getting down to Liverpool fighting for a Champions League play.
Yeah, and I think, listen, as experienced as this side is, they've not had that to deal with before. two games out from the end of the season and all that type of thing. So we've been through a lot of situations, but we've not been through this. And so I can forgive the players a little bit for that. I do think it was a little bit too much to ask. What they've achieved in the last sort of 10 games anyway, to be honest, is over and above what I expected they could achieve, because I thought they were so bad and so inconsistent that there was no chance of us even getting a run of what we did together. And so we were able to do that, and it was pretty cool while it lasted. Ultimately, it's going to fall short, I think. It was great to be able to be there to send off Bobby Firmino and James Milner and Naby and Ox, but it was really... really not about him, but it was also really, really just about Bobby Firmino and James Milner for the most part, wasn't it? And it was one of those days where you're going to look back and go, yeah, I was there, and it was brilliant, and we're he scored, and that's all that I needed.
We're not great at emotional occasions, in general.
Yeah, in clubs of Liverpool.
In terms of how often, the impact of off the field, for example, as I referenced, Gerrard's last game, we were fucking crap. Carragher's last game, crap. The end of the cup, crap. Like, sometimes, like, the aura of what you've been through, like, even, like, you guys, you know, how good was Basel? And the people, crap. But, like, because it's so emotional beforehand and, like, all before it, and then the actual game could sometimes be like a bit of a damp squib.
I would point out that Liverpool were crap in all of those at all of those times. We went out and got smashed by Stoke just after that, Gerrard's one and what have you. But no, it is an interesting point of, it's like, what were people there for? People didn't go to that game thinking, let's go and take it to Aston Villa. We couldn't be playing anyone. I don't think anyone really considered what it meant to be playing Aston Villa. And look, Liverpool's coaches will have done and the players will have done. But I agree in so much as it was all about that. And I don't know, is that the double-edged sword of making this known that this is going to be a thing? Bobby deserved the send-off. All the send-off he got, he fully deserved. He deserved to have people hurriedly paint banners and get the things up and dig out your shirt out the loft and all that kind of stuff. He deserved all of that. But that is the knock-on effect of doing those kind of things and making it out like it's the big Bobby Firmino leaving party.
I think that's why they did it. I think if we were like last year, they wouldn't have done it. Like Sadio.
Yeah.
I think everyone knew Sadio was going to leave, but they didn't want to. And like Jude Bellingham now at Dortmund, they're in a title race, so he's keeping his mouth shut. All the reports are telling otherwise, but he's just keeping stum. And I think Liverpool, it was a lip top four needed to win, but I think it was actually more about Roberto Firmino. I bet if this was last year and we were trying to win a league,
or
and
even if it was in our hands this
year.
Yeah,
exactly. If something was going our way, they might not have done it. It's just that, but like Divock got one last year, but he just wasn't on the pitch.
Yeah,
that was the difference. He was injured, so there's ways around it. Ultimately, like, who gives a fuck? Like about the game in general. Like, no, if that makes sense in terms, like, again, if they don't get Champions League, it'll be really annoying if Man U or Newcastle slip up twice in the next two games and we weren't ready to capitalise it. But Jürgen, the way he spoke, he's been way less optimistic than us. And that kind of gives, you know, he's been like, oh no, we're not even...
He's been speaking about next season for a few weeks.
Or he's been like, well, we might win 9 games and they still won't slip up. Like, he's been all over it. So, I do, but like when I say I don't give a toss about the results, I mean, ultimately, this day will always be remembered as Bobby Firmino and James Milner's last game. The draw, we drew against Villa, and it might have impacted us getting top four. Liverpool lost top four when they got beat by Leeds and when they got beat by Nottingham Forest and when they got battered at Wolves and battered at Brighton. Liverpool didn't draw an Aston Villa, didn't cost Liverpool the Champions League, you know what I mean?
The thing I would say on that is there is the players played the occasion where the fans are allowed to. Fans are fine, that's what we're there for. We're there to play for that occasion, that's fine. And it was actually boss to see so many, like, I'm usually not one for, you know, wearing me Liverpool top to the game and stuff, but it was boss to see the amount of red you could see throughout the stadium. Yeah. And bear in mind, it's probably because that kit is so nice, because that was everywhere. But that's where I'm like, but the lads should know better, because they're more professional, they're more experienced. It's down to the fans to have this moment with Bobby Firmino, because we're ultimately the ones who adored him, and we're the ones who sang his song, made him a hero. He made himself that as well. But he loves Liverpool, and Liverpool don't half love him back. So I was fine with it being emotional and everything like that, because that's what we're there for. Liverpool didn't show up. That is the problem. Ultimately, the players on the pitch didn't show up, and they played the occasion, and that's what you can't do. The fans playing the occasion, that's absolutely fine. That's
also
what we always do.
I think, Chloe, like, get used to it. because this is happening.
Yeah.
Henderson will go soon. Yep. And there'll be a Salah day and a Virgil day and an Alisson day. And they're not, that's when you a team who win everything at a similar age, very rarely. And Sadio should have got one of these, and it was unfortunate he never.
Because
how it all panned out, he deserved a mural and a day and all that kind of stuff as well. They're all going to get one, so get used to it. Because at the end of next season, it could be someone else. Very few. I don't think we're not going to get many Coutinhos who just fuck off and piss us all off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think everyone who leaves Liverpool are going to be doing it in this way, respectfully. Like for example, it might be a decision from above, like James Milner got, but they're going to do it this way, so I have to get used to it.
The thing is with that, to play a counterpoint to that, there shouldn't be, because they can't allow this situation to develop with all these footballers. The reason that happens is because they're all leaving on a free. Yeah. Mane doesn't get it regardless, because we've got to negotiate a transfer fee for him 2 weeks down the line with Bayern Munich or whatever.
Yeah,
so, you know, there should only be a Mohamed Salah day if he retires at Liverpool. And, you know, his legs have fell off because we've run him into the ground, and then we're handing him back to, goes back to Egypt to do one heroic seat or whatever. You know what I mean? Those kind of situations. This is hopefully the last of our mismanagement of contracts and all those kind of situations to come, because we've just that's the thing that annoys me about the Bobby Firmino thing is I think it'll be vindicated. I don't think he's not going to put a 50 game season down at the highest level, I don't think, after this. And we've been getting diminishing returns in terms of time on the pitch in the last couple of years off him. But you know, when you're letting good footballers walk out your door for nothing, there's a little, that's, you know, we've had too much of that going in the last couple of seasons. But I don't want to get too negative on it. What I do want to say is, because for Milner and for me, you know, I was thinking about this morning, I don't think you could typify Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool better than two footballers, in so much as you've got James Milner, you know, who's made himself this rugged, dogged, determined, will play any position for you under the sun, will boot you up in the air, will run all day, will do whatever. And then you've got Roberto Firmino, who actually has got a lot of that going for him as well, but he's got the flair, he's got the big smiles and all that. They are...
Well, I said this to you in the fan cam after the game. There's a Venn diagram of Milner's qualities and Firmino's qualities, and where it overlaps is what Liverpool has been under Jurgen Klopp. It is that unbelievable flair, yet the work rate that goes with it, and the work behind the scenes that goes with it. So I think you're spot on there. And, you know, for me, I mean, am I right in saying they were both signed before Jurgen Klopp?
Mm-hmm.
So they both come in, and yet two players that he doesn't sign end up epitomising his own Liverpool side, which is a bit bizarre in and of itself, isn't it, really, when you consider. But they had the qualities that Jurgen needed to create a side that would go on to conquer absolutely everything over the course of the next few years. So for me, you know, I think it'd be an interesting one, because James Milner's a little bit further removed from being an integral part of the first 11 than Bobby is. I think Bobby's maybe a season removed from that. Milner probably didn't get the send-off I don't think he quite deserved, for what he was able to give us over the course of the 8 seasons, because it was just a little bit longer, and he's a sub for so long now that he's almost become, in some quarters, a bit of a like, oh, fucking hell, James Milner's 37 and all that. That's not, James Milner was fucking amazing for us for a huge period of time.
There is also that thing, though, where it's alongside Bobby Firmino. Everyone's going to pale compared to that.
The fella who filled in at left back for a year isn't your number 9.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that it is, isn't it? Unfortunately for James,
I don't think he'd like
no less of a massive cog.
I don't think James Milner would want to stand outside his own mural. I don't think that's just, I don't know, I might be wrong.
Maybe. Yeah.
But what I would say is like,
we remember the Liverpool player though, and I think that's saying something.
Yeah, he's been everywhere, and he'll be remembered as a Liverpool player. But those two have played more games for Klopp than anyone else, and they're the two lads he inherited, and he chose who got kept and who went. And it wasn't long before he had it clear out. It took him a couple of years to get rid of who he didn't want.
Yeah.
But he chose to keep these two fellas about. He transformed both of them into different players. Both phenomenal. And they both deserve the send-off. And I know Milner's going to get something on Southampton, isn't he? Again, there's a banner getting sent down Southampton for him. More than deserves it. It was just like, what was interesting is they were two of our best players when they come on.
Yes,
I think if you don't play ratings on the game, and I know you guys did, I'd give those two the best marks and the goalie. Because the second they came on, it might have been because we changed the shape a bit, I understand it, but they're two really intelligent footy players, and I think they've both been sat on the bench, and whether they've been instructed or a little bit themselves or whatever, they knew exactly what that name needed. Bobby Firmino needed to be a nine. He didn't need to be a false nine. He needed to be a nine. And James Milner needed to get out the midfield and get out into space.
Yeah.
And get out, get rid of this congestion and get lanes for other people to fight. They both played it. I think they are two of, if not the two most intelligent players we had at the Klopp era. They just, they're meant for the right occasion, no matter what the occasion is. They know what's needed.
Yeah, I totally agree on that. I mean, the thing is, I think if Milner had been going on his own, you know, I think he'd have got a huge send-off. But this is the thing. It's a difference in footballers, isn't it? You know, there's not 10,000 Milner 7 shirts floating around that are getting pulled out for that game, because people, he's been a really good footballer. He's a Liverpool legend, but it's a difference between a Liverpool legend like a Ronnie Whelan or a Liverpool legend like Ian Rush or Kenny Dalglish or whatever it is.
Goal scorers got the glory, mate. That's exactly it.
I just want to read a quote. I got this off Anfield Watch, but obviously I guess it'll be from the Liverpool website. But Milner said, "Loved every minute here. Unbelievable club. The size of the club, the history before you come in, and we've managed to create our own history. Travelling around the world, seeing the support we have, the special nights we've had here, European nights, the unbelievable games. Obviously, Dortmund and Barca always stand out, but other periods in games, those memories will stay with you forever. I'm Leeds through and through and always have been and always will be, but I never probably thought that another club would get into me as much as Liverpool has. That says everything about the place and the fans and the history and what we've created here, but also the group of people." Like, oh.
But then did you see the stuff that we've been going around this weekend about what was taken out of his LFC TV interview? Did you see any of this on Twitter and stuff? So he basically came out and said that, because the clips have surfaced somehow, I don't know how, but he came out and said basically Jürgen got overruled. Jürgen wanted to keep him. And in the end, you know, they decided not to offer him a contract. And like that says, again, to a testament to the man that he is and the player that he is, that Jürgen still wanted him around, even at this age. And there was talk of it being as a part of the coaching staff as well and stuff, and the club overruled Jürgen. And that goes back to the mismanagement of the contracts and the age of the players and stuff. And maybe we are looking at learning our lesson a little bit.
I don't think that's a bad thing, by the way.
I don't think
it's a hugely bad thing that they've said, you know what, mate, let's cut this. If we're going to rebuild, let's fucking rebuild.
Yeah.
But it was interesting that Liverpool LFC TV cut that bit out of when so it was live. So that's how people got it. But it was live. Yeah. But then when it got chopped out, I think is what happened there after the game. That was it. It's an interesting one. But I think something similar might have happened with other players in the past as well, where Liverpool decided, you know what, no, because like with all due respect,
Wijnaldum
was in a similar boat. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I love Jürgen, but again, one of the criticisms of him is that like maybe he is a little bit too sensitive. Like, if Liverpool want to get,
you know where this comes from, by the way, comes from being at Dortmund and selling your best player every year.
Yeah.
It is the exact thing that would happen when you leave Dortmund and you don't need to sell your best player every year.
Yeah.
You then to go the other way and you
want to keep everyone. Like,
you would, what, wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
By the way, I'd have no issue with James Milner staying. I understand it, but what the point is, if they are going to go and sign three or four midfielders, Jordan Henderson should become the new James Milner.
Yes.
Yeah. You shouldn't need James Milner. With all due respect to James Milner, Liverpool shouldn't be in a position where they still need him. The only reason I wanted to keep him was because I thought, fucking hell, what else are we going to have? But like since then, Curtis has stepped up, the emergence of Stefan Bajcetic. The squad, you shouldn't need. You know, Jordan Henderson should be that role coming next season, whether he is or not, I don't know. But I think that, I do wonder if they got bit by the Henderson contract.
Yeah.
And they've gone, we don't want to be, you know, they want that again, maybe, I don't know.
I think there's definitely got to be a consideration, and because I'm a little concerned over it, particularly the Milner stuff, because I don't think you really need to replace a lot of James Milner the footballer, because you've got other lads you can do it. We talked about this the other week. You've got more substitutes you can use, all that kind of stuff, but it's the leadership qualities. And it's the fact that he's a bit of a throwback in terms of like how you conduct yourself off the field and in the changing room. You know, this whole like telling people to get off the phones and all that kind of thing. You need someone to set those kind of standards. And what you're asking for is somebody now to step up now he's gone. Whereas what you want ideally is someone to step up while they're there. And that's a worrying precedent when you're out. Because Gini Wijnaldum's a good example of this in a different way. And I said, he was our third choice DM. He left and nobody stepped up to be our third choice DM. It went to Milner, who was our fourth choice DM, to become our third choice DM. And that's a weakening of what you've got. So there's a lot of pressure now, I think, on the Trent Alexander-Arnolds, not so much on Henderson and Van Dijk and stuff, who were already there, but who else in that dressing room now is going to turn around and be the one who makes sure standards.
It should be Virgil van Dijk, by the way.
It should be, but I don't think that's Virgil van Dijk. I said it often, he for me is Steven Gerrard. He's so good at football. He's your give a withering glance. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who's going to run around grabbing the change. He just gets about the business of being the best player on the pitch.
Robertson, I think, is where it's at.
He's stepped up this season in that regard anyway. Obviously, he's been Scotland captain for a couple of years now. It feels like he's ready to move into that sort of role anyway.
Mm.
If he's not already, to be honest with you. But the fact that Jürgen still wants them around tells you that maybe he doesn't have the trust in the players that are there,
What do we think of there's some footage of Tsimikas crying as well? Do you reckon that's just because he's totes emotion? What is that?
Fucking hell, mate, you can't say. Sorry,
just fancy saying it. I tried Tejas on a stream the other day and that didn't go down well. Tejas is very like, do you reckon that's because he's a very emotional guy? Chloe, it's because he's totes emotion, or it's because he's going.
Did you say totes emotion?
She must do, she's a youngster.
No.
What would you say?
Why was he crying?
No, but like, if someone's a very...
What are you crying for, you blair?
If someone's a very emotional person, is there a slang that we don't know? You teach us.
Someone's emotional?
Yeah.
Nah.
Okay, sorry.
What are emotions?
But what wouldn't you say? Toad's emotion.
Yeah. That's I didn't know where he was going with it. That's how much it was.
He knew he was wrong because he pulled out of it. Yeah. He couldn't even say it. He was like, oh God, I'm sorry.
Sure, I'll never get an opportunity to say that again. So why not?
Rightly so, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But on him crying, it's weird. I hope he's just as angry as I am at the fact that Liverpool have been too shit and are now no longer in the European elite competition, because I am still fuming about that.
I know what he's crying about. Fucking Anzi Magalena on a Thursday night. I'm playing that one. Robbo's not playing in fucking Utrecht away, is he? See you later. I'm off to Moldova. That's me.
Yeah.
I think there was some quotes or something he'd came out with saying how Liverpool was like the club for him or whatever, how they've raised him since he's been here, how he loves it here, how he fits in. I mean, he clearly calls himself the adopted Scouser. He clearly loves Liverpool. I feel like it's a case of if he wants more minutes somewhere, then yeah, okay, he's probably going to have to leave because he's not going to get that. But saying that, I think he's a boss back up to Robertson. Robertson is coming into the latter end of his career, really, when you think about it. He's being ran into the ground just like Trent, just like Virg, the other players who fell off a cliff recently. So I don't know what to make of it. It's a bit weird. Maybe he's absolutely gutted that Bobby Firmino's leaving the club.
He's just a huge Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain fan.
Yeah, maybe.
He's crying because he'll never see Perry again.
Shame, to be honest. Oh, that it me
twice. Always have Burnley away, Perry.
He just loves Naby Keita. I think that's what it is. He's a big fan. Did we see, by the way, Naby Keita getting injured by the picture frame?
Incredible. Scenes.
At the end of the game, when you give him his little plaque, he holds you by the hook and hurts his hand and goes like that. I think fucking hell, Naby.
I started like that, so I'll finish like that, Dad.
I'm not thinking of Robert, of Kostas going, because if we let him go, I'd be fuming at us because we've got to then buy someone else to fill that.
Yeah. My
problem here is I think he's back up for a position that doesn't exist
at the moment. Yeah.
Jackson was had a word and said, you're off. Because Liverpool have never done that. That's the thing. Under Jürgen, Liverpool have never specifically said, Jürgen said this, hasn't he? I very rarely ever tapped someone on the shoulder and said, see you later. Mm. I'll wait for them to come to me. So maybe it is that, but maybe it was a very emotional day.
Alisson was crying. He might have just decided he's going.
Yeah. Alisson was crying.
I feel like he'd get a guard of honour in a different sense of the fact he won us the FA Cup last year.
Yeah.
Like,
I was looking at Joel Matip and his family, just to see if there was any, because you got this. I remember when it was like Sturridge's time, and you started to think, you know, what type of photos are they posing for here? Is this like, I'm getting me one last memento in front of the cop kind of stuff? And I didn't notice anything, and I didn't notice the Tsimikas stuff until I saw someone put the clip on Twitter today. But it does make you wonder if, you know, Liverpool have got a big job to do in the summer, and whether there's just a few lads where they've looked at it and gone. Because he was all right when he came on, wasn't he? You know, he's been a great backup for Robertson, but what does a Robertson backup look like now?
Yeah.
Do you need to own another left back, or do you need a do you need it? Would you rather a left-sided centre-half do that job instead? And is he therefore the right fit for that? Is a question I don't have the answer to. So it could be that thing of he might well know that he's done his bit, or he might have decided it himself. I don't really want to be a backup.
That's really like what we mean. By the way,
exactly. just for the talking sake, because that's the simple answer to it. He's just caught up in the moment of the whole thing. But there will be lads there who aren't named, you know, James Milner, Roberto Firmino, Naby Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, who won't be at Liverpool when the season starts.
I think for me, like, I've said this word or these two words quite a lot recently, the saleable assets thing. Like, he is a proper saleable asset, especially if you are thinking I need a left sided centre half to do that role. Why have a specialist on there that's probably worth not far off 30 million quid, who doesn't really had an opportunity to prove himself in this position either, to be fair? Like, really good at his set pieces and all that type of stuff, but like, we might be able to get someone in who's actually suited to the role for 30 million quid and come out net sound.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing is, last year there is a massive change, and maybe it's just because I wasn't looking at it. He was prancing round by the cop with the FA Cup. He was going into the crowd. He was, you know, clapping everyone. He was coming over to the cop so close to clap us and have a laugh and joke about. I didn't see him. I didn't even pick him out yesterday. And usually Costas comes over to us and, like, he claps us and he wants to get his song going. He loves all of that. And yet he's realised it's not his moment to do that, by the way. But it was a bit weird because I didn't pick him out from the crowd, and I picked out everyone who went past me, and I was like, you know, oh, look how cute they are with their little kid. And I saw Axel kicking a football and he's got a right peg on him there. I think it was his right anyway. But yeah, I didn't actually see Costas at any point, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Hey, obviously, we'll pick up more on that in the summer.
Whose kid's called Axel?
Ox, is it not?
Yeah, little Axel Chamberlain.
Oh.
Axel Oxlade Chamberlain.
He's called
Alex.
Yeah,
I just know. It was interesting because I went straight to Possesses Axel all the Van Dyke. Sounds like a great name.
Yeah.
Couldn't imagine it had been Milner. I didn't imagine James would go and let's call him Axel Milner.
That is the boggle solution to picking your kid's name. That isn't it? Like,
bang.
We've had
some
messages from the football legends. Hardy, it's David, says, given everything, quite happy, quite appreciative for fifth. Pajach and Shorts, once again, an absolute snacky delight. John Lee David Blackshaw, hero that he is, says, if it's going to be fifth, considering the team slash squad we have, I'll be a little disappointed with this season. But again, after the heroics of last and the injuries this, I'm able to give the team a soft pass on this season's achievements. In the future seasons, it will be remembered for the United destruction and Bobby's last goal for us. Alisson's been my player of the season for the simple fact that without him, we would have been in the bottom half of the table. So that being said, roll on Sunday, and once again, I will shout, I will sing, and I will contest every referee decision like I have the power to change it. Up our fucking Reds. Wonderful comment there from John. And the last one from Howdy's back again. So, Steve, imagine this season with all the injuries without Milner. He's a great utility bench player and a leader. He's leaving at just the right time given the context of our roster.
Yeah, like the fact that we've needed him so much this year shows how fucked up the summer was. So if my hope is they can get the summer right. So then two new players and one, maybe then you've got three new players. Then you've got Thiago, Jones, Pacetic, Henderson. That's your seven. And then you've got Trent doing whatever Trent does. You shouldn't need James Milner. That's the point of that. The reason I would have kept him around was because I didn't see this coming from Curtis. Thiago's still an absolute enigma, and there's a conversation about that fella at this point in time and his injury and stuff. That's why I was thinking at the time, I'd just keep him.
Yeah.
But now, excuse me, if we're going to get the rebuild and we're going to get the signings were promised, then you shouldn't need him.
I just look at it and go, particularly if it's going to be Europa League football, and that has been the X factor, I think, of so much we're trying to do going into the new season. Because it was interesting, Klopp was quite unequivocal talking about Kelleher pre-match, about how it would take an astronomical offer for us to consider it. The Europa League changes the landscape, what Liverpool do, and I'd have had no problem with James Milner captaining a Liverpool Europa League side next season, you know, taking a bunch of younger players, taking Curtis and Harvey and Ramsey and, you know.
See, I'm okay with Hendo doing it.
But yeah, well, that is, of course, the possibility.
And also, Paul, he was the backup right back, and we don't have right back anymore. So if Trent was injured now, touch wood doesn't happen, You wouldn't want James Milner doing what Alexander Arnold's doing. It's going to have to be someone else.
Yeah.
When he was just a right back, it made sense. But now there isn't really a position in the team for him.
You're right.
Where's he
and
playing?
And someone who's probably on
big up,
north of 100 grand a week.
He took a pay cut, but even said, you're right. They don't want to take that again. Ask him to go and get less and less. And he'll go to Brighton and he's going to do exactly what you've just said for Brighton. He's going to be Brighton's Europa League captain. And he's going to go to take a team who haven't played European football and show them how to do it. So it's perfect for him as well.
I'm just letting you know, if we don't win the Europa League, it's an absolute shit show by Liverpool next season.
All right, Chloe.
Bloody hell, Chloe.
I'm being
honest. Let us finish this season.
Chloe,
make this season a disappointment before you make next
season. Let us at least have to play Seville. And then
I still think Real Madrid are getting knocked out the Champions League, coming down into the Europa, knocking us out of that.
We only ever lose to Real Madrid and Seville. As long as you can avoid them, we should be fine.
Shut up, Chloe. Fucking
hell.
No,
genuinely, I'm being honest. If
you don't even know who's going to be in it.
Sorry, bullshit. Because if we win the league next season, because and they get knocked out in the Europa League semi-final, you won't give a fuck about whether we run the Europa League.
No, but I'm saying if Europa, we're going to focus on the two main competitions, which are now going to be
the Prem. 15 the last time we were in this competition. Don't do it to yourself. Just relax.
Liverpool should be winning that competition.
We say this every
simple.
Time we get in that competition. You're right. You are right.
Should.
But you just. It's May, Chloe, in 2023.
Europa League final has happened for this season's event yet.
Yeah. Just show your beans.
The point still stands.
I know, but it doesn't need to be.
Don't be angry,
verbalised. Just relax.
Keep save it for when we draw Seville.
Let's talk about the Sunday then, because obviously the mural, Bobby Euro was unveiled. Chloe, you went down there. Lovely moments, lovely scenes. Got a bit close to Bobby.
Yeah, he came, what?
Wow, that's how close.
The coach pulled up, we weren't expecting that. Like the entire Liverpool coach turned up, and we were like, "Is like who's on this coach? What's going on here?" And there was a party at Anfield, so people thought maybe it's just the team, and he's just getting off. It was incredible to see his entire family get off and support him. His little girls came off the bus first and they were stunning and they looked so happy. Then his wife gets off and they just stare and they're just looking at this mural and they're like, wow. Then Bobby Firmino gets off in a suit looking incredible. And he was just lovely. His entire family was lovely. And to... see the team around him, because what we don't see is the sacrifices everyone else makes for him to be able to do this at the top level. And to see his family, his mum on the day of the game was waving at, she was absolutely buzzing.
She was giving them flags, the bifters,
wasn't
she? She
was giving it loads. So to see the family behind him, they were all lovely. He was boss with the kids as well, making sure they all got in the front of the photos and stuff. And yeah, it was a boss moment to be a part of. To see him clapping and singing along to his song whilst the little group of us started it and sung it. It was a boss moment, yeah. Just one that'll stay with me.
And then they were all going to Anfield for photographs and all the trophies and stuff as well, weren't they? Like, so
no one else wore the suit though. No one gave the rest of the team the memo. Bobby is looking flying, and there's lads in trackies and flip-flops and that. He just popped
that's
down for the
standard
day.
Really, isn't it? Like, if he didn't have a piano out in the middle of Anfield's pitch, he's like, he's not bobbied enough for me.
He's not Alexis Sanchez, mate. Come on. I thought it was wonderful. Obviously, we had John Coleshaw in on the Thursday Night Pint last week. He was the artist, or one of the artists who painted the mural.
Bento, was it?
Really, really good stuff. So if you want to get a little bit closer on him, he did a bit of chat on Redmen Uncensored on that kind of stuff as well. And as mentioned, we obviously got the Bobby Firmino doc coming out in the summer, so we got some cool stuff from the day.
His wife's well up for that as well. She was like, oh my god, really, thanks, send us it. And I was like, we will, don't worry.
Do you have to give Mrs. Firmino a discount?
We'll give her the year code.
I'll make one in Portuguese for year. I'll send her that one. We're going to use one.
Yeah.
Because she'd be German. Did you give him a scarf, didn't you?
Yeah, he was made up with that as well. We gave him the Hoffenheim scarf that they wanted him to have. And he,
this is half an iron fans.
Yes.
Wasn't it?
And he was like, really? And we were like, yeah, well, we're not carrying a half an iron scarf around here for nothing. And he took it off us and he was absolutely buzzing about a scarf. But yeah, he was just down to earth, lovely, really, really happy with his mural as well. As soon as like he stopped signing and stuff, he stood to get a photo and he was just the biggest smile you've ever seen on someone's face for his mural. But yeah, it was class. Yeah.
Boss. Well,
it's just a shame he doesn't get to go on the coach again and see it every game week, yeah, like all the others, really, annoying, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh well.
And wind other people up like Jordan does to Trent every time. Right, we've got a couple of things to draw your attention to in that regard. We've got a new Bobby Firmino t-shirt, which is available on redmenmerch.com right now, which you can get if you want to celebrate the Brazilian genius. Then get involved. There's also some new stuff there. There's a wonderful Succession t-shirt and one for Jota as well. So yeah, the future is very, very bright. And that is just how cool you're going to look this summer in your Redmen Merch t-shirt.
Can't wait. Do you remember the first, like, memory of Roberto Firmino? Because mine was, I saw a video of him and he was kicking a footy into a basketball hoop behind him, and that was the first ever thing. Once we'd like signed him, that was the first video that did the rounds, and I knew from then on he was going to be washed. I couldn't even say
what game. I remember him playing right mid under Brendan Rodgers and going, what have we bought here?
my overriding memory of that sort of first season is Darren Farley not being a particularly big fan. Do you remember that video?
No.
My word.
It's just mad that it, yeah. I've been banging the drum with it, but like the City game away is the one that I really remember of him. I just remember thinking, we've bought this really good Brazilian lad.
4-1, was it?
Yeah, and we've got no, and he's got like no pace. Why is he? And it was Brendan Rodgers' greatest insult was to put someone out on the wing. It was like, short of playing them wing back, which he did, Lazamacha was playing left wing back. It was like his, I don't really know what to do with you. Just go and play over there, lads. Figure it out.
We're getting beat 3-0 at West Ham. Coutinho got sent off. And then I remember walking out going, he's fucking... And who's he? He can't even run. We've got a lad playing number 11. Shite, can't run. That's my first thing of him. Get Benteke on. And I was like, oh my God, what an idiot.
I did love about Firmino the fact that he just didn't give a shit in the middle of, like, when the season's end. And he'd come back with, like, baby weight. Every pre-season. And you're like, at least you're enjoying yourself, lad. Fair play. And by the time the season starts, he's like a fucking racehorse again.
Yeah.
Love that.
It's boss that his kids are now scousers as well.
Yeah.
Like
Lucas's.
Yeah, Liverpool will always be a party, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to wrap up on and give you one last final teaser for this Bobby Firmino documentary. Don't worry, we're going to be talking about this a lot in the coming weeks because the work that Joe Baker, our director for it, has done is sensational. If you've enjoyed the Jordan Henderson documentary we did 2 years ago, this is like levels above just in terms of everything that's kind of going into it. So, yeah, we can reveal one person that we have got contributing towards it in Jordan Henderson, but there's loads more of these to come in the coming weeks, so make sure you stay tuned. Anyway, that's it for the Redmen Originals podcast for this week. Just a reminder, use the year code on your Club Captain yearly subscriptions to get a 50% off, just £25 for an entire year of Liverpool podcast interviews, documentaries, and, of course, transfer coverage out the ears this summer. And we'll be back with one final season-related podcast next week. Can you describe Bobby Firmino in one word?
Legend. It's pretty standard though, isn't it? It's not great, but he is, isn't he?
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.